Hello and welcome to my show, Could You Be More Specific? I'm your host, Jonathan Steele, coming to you by the way of the Stay Woke podcast. And on this episode of Could You Be More Specific, I want to touch on the new Fyre Festival doc, and I'm going to title this episode of Could You Be More Specific called Fyre Lies. Now, I just had the opportunity to watch both the Netflix documentary and the Hulu documentary that covers this new, Luttry Music Festival that was supposed to take place in late 2016, and had Ja Rule and Billy McFarlane, who was a part of putting together this festival. You know, it's so much to really cover in the doc, in both. What makes it kind of more fascinating is that one of the groups, as far as, you know, that was associated with Billy McFarlane, Jerry Media, I believe, was a part of the first one. The first doc, which is was with Netflix, and it definitely paints them in a much more favorable light than when you see on Hulu. But if there's one consistent thread from both docs in relation to the festival as to why it went wrong, is the fact that everyone involved knew that everything that they were doing in terms of putting together that type of festival, which would be similar to Burning Man or Coachella, was not logistically or logically possible for them to do, because most festivals usually take around 18 months. They were trying to do theirs in six. They didn't have no really good infrastructure that was in place for them to do it in the Bahamas. One of the things that's really consistent with the doc is the fact that they kept marketing the fact that the island that they were going to have the festival on was owned by Pablo Escobar, even though they were told previously to not mention that. There were many members of the families who had loved ones that was murdered by Pablo Escobar, asked them to not. Why would they market that? Asked them to not use his name. So it's just, it was, you know, it's a great watch on both ends, because it's really a magnifying glass to what's still going on, especially in our social media climate, is that if something is marketed right and it looks like it's the real deal, even legitimate companies don't do the kind of checks and balances that you think that they would do. Because what's fascinating is that everyone that they had involved on the team, from the production side to the people that was filming the commercials with all the models that they were able to get, and the influencers, which is a very fascinating topic to touch on, influencers and social media, but no one really knew that much about it. And you can kind of understand why certain things are vague at times. And there's certain events that have probably built that kind of climate, and justifiably so. But you know, it's really fascinating that the fact that no one really did any due diligence to really check this on out. So one of the early parts of the doc with Billy McFarlane, which, you know, it really turns out that this guy really did cheat and defraud a lot of people out of their money, was that he got famous for a metal card called Magnesis. And it was something about having some exclusive access to, you know, you being in New York, and it was a nicer part of town where you can, you know, mingle and be, you know, exclusively associated with people. And that financial model kind of ended up unraveling, you know, very quickly. He had discrepancies with the amount of memberships that he was selling for that, the amount of money that he was actually generating for the company. What's even more fascinating with Billy McFarlane, because I don't believe they really touch on it, the Netflix doc, but in the Hulu doc, they actually touch on the fact that he was doing something that was very similar to Google. And he was doing a thing called Spring, I believe is what it was called. And he didn't come out well at all. None of the graphics, none of the things that he had set up to play for the video didn't work. But from what the feedback in terms of the people that have worked with them and the observations on him, is that he's a salesman. You know, he's a classic car dealer. Talks real fast. You could tell he's smart, but you could tell that he does kind of have, you know, he's always kind of like running something on you, because he's very vague on a lot of stuff. And what's even more crazy is the fact that he had multiple opportunities to close the festival. And he knew he couldn't do that, even down to booking the artist, which I know really that's what it ended up coming down to, which both docs showed you, is that it was great promotion for his app. You know, the whole booking talent and kind of being the Uber booking talent. You can just reach out and connect to an artist. You can put a bid down for how much you want to pay them, and they have a chance to either accept or decline an offer. The concept of it is really good. It's really fascinating because you're cutting out a lot of the middlemen in terms of contacting agents and managers and things like that. But the execution of that model overall was really is where the real problems came in at. Man, there's so much to unpack about these two docs. I do want to kind of touch on Ja Rule a bit. What's interesting with Ja Rule is that he has a lot of plausible deniability on his end to a certain degree. I mean, I know he's being mentioned in a couple lawsuits that are ongoing in regards to the festival and how much money was extorted from the people who, one, worked on the event that didn't get paid, you know, people that worked at the restaurants that didn't get paid. It's just, it was a number of people in that country that did not get treated well in terms of the amount of work that they were doing on a regular basis. And as far as Ja Rule goes, I mean, even though in both docs, he really never got into specifics of what the festival was. He always kind of leaned towards Billy talking about that. And I think one of the more damning parts of it in terms of how Ja Rule looked at it is when one of the guys, you know, says that, hey, you know, if you knowingly take money from someone and you know you can't deliver on something, that's fraud. And Ja Rule's answer was, no, it's not fraud, it's false advertising. And that right there, when you hear him say something like that, I know that's a good legal term to use to kind of, you know, back out of, you know, being liable for something that's perceived to be a criminal act. But the fact that you were able to even put that together and say something like that, it still comes across like you were okay then with an event happening that you knew that you guys really couldn't do. And you did it anyway. And everyone, even on the first one with the Netflix doc, everyone knew that that event wasn't going to work. Even people that came on late wasn't going to work. And then what makes it worse is that they had multiple people tell them that along the way, who were experienced people who have put together festivals and have put together some of these things. Even this one guy literally on the second documentary had to contact Comcast to tell them not to send the money that Billy was going to have because he overinflated the value of his company. And Comcast, you know, who's one of the biggest companies in the world, was going to give him $20 million because he had overinflated numbers on his company. And if that guy had not stressed to him, I gotta get his name. He's on both docs too, where he was like, "Hey, don't invest in this. This is a bad deal. Please don't do this." And luckily, they held out. But unfortunately, all the employees that worked for Billy didn't get paid either, and they were given promises, you know, that, you know, that money was coming in. So essentially, he had people work for well over a year on an event that he knew was never going to happen. And it's one thing to be, you know, optimistic, and it's another to be delusional. And the fact that he continued to just, at one point, he ended up ordering $2 million worth of liquor, worth of vodka, and all this type of stuff. And he had to pay a $900,000 tax, which I believe was on the second documentary. It's crazy. It's so much information on this documentary that I don't even think I could probably explain it all to you in this pod. It'll probably be something that, you know, I would have to expand on further. I would love to kind of touch on this with D, because D's really good at this stuff in terms of breaking down topics and issues. So hopefully I can, you know, I told him he's got to watch this show, watch both these docs actually. And so I would love to kind of do something with him where we can kind of talk about it so we can kind of further expand on it with you guys. But man, it's crazy. And even when he got indicted, even when the sky was falling on him, he still then gets linked up with another company to still sell passes to Hamilton. And he tried to sell a Beyonce and Jay-Z tickets. He tried to sell a private dinner with LeBron. I'm like, some of the stuff that he was still doing in the midst of going through an indictment was crazy. And he still, you know, he got 6 years. I think he forfeited like it was on his sentence, it was like $26 million. You know, yeah, $26.3 million. And then you can add up the rest after that in terms of money that was forfeited. And the fact that he did that, I mean, the estimates are at, I think, roughly $100 million, could be more. I know it was something that they were still evaluating at the time. But it was mind-boggling that all that happened. And then even the tents that they were using were FEMA tents. You know, once they got there, they were not in private jets. They were like in an old school kind of, I think, 747 plane. It was packed. And then they ended up taking them on buses to the quote unquote luxury villas that they were selling. And they were selling villas that were non-existent, just like homes that were non-existent. And I was just thinking that whole time, it's like, hey, if you want to do something of like, hey, you want to put on a festival in an island, one in a developing country, I might add, then you would need to take probably more than 18 months. You might need to look at it like, hey, we got to build this like an NFL stadium because you got to create an infrastructure and an economy. Since you're talking about you want to do something that lasts year round, that would take much longer than 6 months. And it will definitely take longer than 18 months because you have to then just show a sustained level of viability as to why that would work. One of the things that happened several years ago when we had the Olympics in Brazil, I don't know if you guys remember, it was a big thing about it came down to Brazil and Chicago. And they was like, oh, let's have it in Brazil because it's nice and beaches and stuff like that. People wanted Michael Jordan to advocate for Chicago to get it. And he's like, hey, well, you know, you had Oprah and Obama. If you want to give it to them, give it to them. But the only downside of it being in Chicago is that it's going to be humid. Because once they got there in Brazil, you kind of got what you knew was going to happen. Because we already know what that Olympic Committee is about. It's about money. Because Chicago, the downside would have just been humidity. You would not have had any issues with plumbing or toilets. Or, well, toilets is related to plumbing. But you would not have had any of the hazardous conditions in terms of, you know, they were having issues with, you know, body parts and certain things being found in the water in Brazil. It was crazy at the time. But that would have only been the only downside and is if you had a Chicago. And so that's why if you wanted to do it in the islands, you're going to have to spend a prolonged period of time to do it there. Could you have done the Fyre Festival, say, in Tampa? Yeah, but no, who wants to go to Tampa? And no offense to Tampa, but it's hot and humid in Florida. You know, the island thing had a great thing to it. It's just if you were going to do that, you would need to spend, you know, more time on it. But man, it, you know, the things that this guy did, it's just, it was hard to wrap your mind around how much fraud he was doing. So there are two great documentaries. There's so much more I would like to kind of talk about and cover with it. There's so much to unpack on it. But those are just some of the thoughts that I had about it. I want to thank you guys for listening to the pod. Thank you. For continuing to support this show. Definitely like, share, and follow. I want to thank D for all the hard work he's doing. I hope I'm going to get a show with D. I'm going to have to really push on that, especially with these two documentaries, because I would love to really talk to him about it. But I just want to thank you guys for listening. Definitely support us, become a patron. Looking forward to doing more videos in the future. Hope you guys have a good one and be safe.